The 13th of February, 2024.
That is so long ago. We cannot yet reveal why we're recording these so far in advance, but I just worry what may have happened in the world since this was recorded. Yeah. Like, is Trump the president again by now? What's happened?
See. There is an element of surprise in that, and that's the voice, incidentally, of Sizzletown's humorous host, Tony Martin.
I forgot who he was.
Yeah. And here in the background, soon to be in the foreground, I hope, Jovan.
Hello.
Is Jovan Caro, the young laughter-loving comedian.
Laughter lover. You got humorist laughter lover. And who are you?
Me? Yeah. I'm just Pete Smith.
You're just Pete Smith.
Yeah.
You don't need to elaborate. It's like Madonna. We all know who she is. It's Pete Smith.
I'm dated anyway, aren't I? I mean, I'm 25 years your senior.
That's true.
You're 25 years Jovan's senior.
Yeah.
But for me, I'm sort of right up there.
Yeah.
So really, anything, any pronouncements I make, run the risk of talking about things that people don't know anything about. For instance,
yes.
I found that this is a perfect example, which could turn people off listening. I found a photo in my, you know, going through the files.
What on earth is a photo?
Me with Roy Orbison,
yeah,
the Big O.
That's right. Two photos, in fact.
Exactly.
You sent them to me. I put them up.
Oh, did I send
on
them
the
to
internet?
Oh,
and you know they've got that now. Have you heard about that?
You guys are talking about photos and the internet.
But I put it up on Twitter, and someone goes, "Oh, you know what a treat it must have been to meet the smoothest voice in the world. Roy must have been thrilled."
but the reason I mention it is that photo is
he doesn't have
without
the glasses.
Sunglasses, which was his trademark.
Yeah, right.
Apart from being in the movie The Fastest Guitar in the West, which he made for MGM.
Wow. Okay,
he didn't have his glasses on then, but I'm talking about, you know, performance-wise, he was never seen. Correct me if I'm wrong, but never seen without the sunglasses. But in this case, backstage at Festival Hall, he was there.
I have to say, this podcast does reference some very old and obscure films. I think The Fastest Guitar in the West tops it all.
Am I too young to know who Roy is?
He was the Big O. He sang
Pretty Woman.
Pretty Woman. Don't say you don't know that song.
Pretty Woman, don't tell me you've never heard that song.
You managed to do that without blinking. That was very impressive.
Goodness me, that's worse than Bob Karloff.
I couldn't remember Karloff. Oh. What's happening to us, Pete?
I think I've heard Pretty Woman, yeah.
You know the film Pretty Woman.
I know of the film Pretty Woman.
Well, that brought it all back to life, and it was a big hit before that, and the resurgence in the popularity carried it through to where, you know, people like you.
Your lot. Know,
he's looking at me. He's scoping my shoes, my shorts.
Yeah.
It's a 36 degree day today. It's forecast to be 36. I'm wearing shorts because I'm well prepared, but you're both wearing pants.
That's right. Like civilized people.
Before seeing you guys today, I thought for a moment, what are they going to think of my look? And I'm thinking, I'm looking a little Miami Vice today.
Yeah, but you can get away with it.
With like wearing pink and yellow. I'm wearing Converse, right? They're these red Converse.
They're great. I like those.
Yeah, you like them? Because I thought for a moment, there's the risk of getting a size that's too large and then they start looking like clown shoes.
Yeah.
So are they clown shoes, Pete?
No, not at all. No. They're just smart Converse.
So do you do this, Pete? Do you look at your contemporaries and go, who's well-dressed? Like, who's getting away with certain things?
You do notice if they've got grubby shoes, that's for sure.
Like, I'm now at the age where I look to Larry David and I go, okay, he can get away with that? Really? He's that old and he's getting away with those shoes?
Oh,
so does
really?
That mean I could get away with that?
Like white sneakers and jeans?
I think he's quite well-dressed for...
you should start dressing more like Jeff Goldblum, I think.
Yeah, Jeff Goldblum. Yeah, see, Jeff Goldblum, the thing about Jeff Goldblum is I was watching Invasion of the Body Snatchers recently from 1978, which is a fantastic movie.
Mm.
And it's got the young Jeff Goldblum when he was incredibly skinny.
Mm.
And that was when I used to watch him on TV. He was in a show called 10 Speed and Brown Shoe.
Wait a minute. Let's go through the facts here.
Facts?
There are no facts. There's a lot of questions, but no answers.
Of course there are facts. Take this down. Fact. Norman Marshall is missing. Fact. Harry Vernon is missing.
Fact. Amelia Earhart is missing.
And I remember thinking, finally, a nerd is the hero. Yeah. One of my people is the detective. But then when he made that film, The Fly, he bulked up. He obviously went to the gym and he's retained that sort of bulked up form,
right,
which I've yet to make that transformation. I'm still the old Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, right. How many reps do you push?
I'm never going
to
a gym.
Or whatever.
I've done that thing.
You talk about it.
I reckon I've belonged to three separate gyms over my life. Never, ever been to one.
How about you, Pete? Have you had a protein shake before?
Oh, no. I'd never go in a gym. Physical jerks?
Yeah, yeah.
Not my scene.
But Pete plays golf.
I've met a few physical jerks
on this very show.
Where have they worked? Which network?
All over the place.
How diplomatic. But Pete plays golf, and that involves walking vast distances, even further than I'm walking in my walking project.
They vary, but where I play, it's about 7 kilometres, and the way I play, it's about 9 kilometres.
Yeah,
You can't zigzag and not add to the kilometres.
See, my knowledge of the golfing world is almost entirely derived from the film Caddyshack. So that thing where a gopher comes up out of the hole, does that ever happen?
No, it doesn't, but I've seen a few odd things with magpies.
Yeah. You know. Oh, do you have to wear – you don't have to wear the magpie repelling
it
helmet.
It hasn't got to that, but some people have been injured with – especially during the mating season.
You sure?
And it's not just the magpies either.
Hello!
What have you seen, Pete? What odd things have magpies done?
Well, they roll the ball off the green.
Oh, right.
When your ball is, you know, a foot from the hole and you've got a cinch of a shot, you get up to the green and the magpie's gone and rolled it off thinking it's an egg.
You know what you should do? You should train one to help you get the hole in one.
Like, if a magpie interferes with the ball and it rolls into the hole, is that by the rules allowed?
No, I don't think it is.
Because that's a natural thing that's occurred.
If you don't see it, you've got to go with it. If you see it happen, you get a consensus. And I think, mind you, the local rules come into play and each course is different, you know.
Man, I really want to see Pete with a golf club and a magpie just perched on his shoulder.
Pete going, right now, strike now.
Well, there we are, a golf subject without mentioning Les Smith.
Oh, Les Smith.
Pete, do you ever think you could take us to a golf course? I feel like we could do a road trip thing.
Not dress like this.
Well, yes, but
I'd need pants, I guess.
It took me years to keep my eye on the ball, and even now, you know, it's not perfection. You go and play a game of tennis, and if you muck it up, it doesn't matter because an hour later you go off and have a drink. In the golf course, you're way out there and committed to 4.5 hours of, you know, slog.
That's all right. Without microphones, I think we could handle our presence.
No, you won't be invited.
Here's what happened to me at the bank yesterday. This is a true story. I go to the bank with my passbook.
Don't tell me there's a bank in your area.
There is.
You didn't have to go across suburbs?
No. Well, it was two suburbs away.
Well, there you go.
But I was driving past. I've gone in with my passbook. I filled out the, you know, they make you sign. And the woman's looked at it. And she's looked at my passbook. And then she's looked at me and she's gone, but hang on, that's not your name. I'm going, yeah, Anthony Martin, that's me. And she's going, you're that sports guy. And I've gone, what? And she thought I was Gideon Haig, the sports writer, who I do resemble and, in fact, was once mistaken for by a member of his own family.
What, at Christmas?
No, it was like at some function and someone came up and went, call me Gideon. And I go, I'm not him. And she's going, oh, I'm actually like his second cousin or something like that.
So what did you do to prove yourself?
Well, I had to then pull out my driver's license not to prove my identity, but to prove that I wasn't Gideon Haig.
But let's pick up on this point, please, for our listeners and for me.
Hey, God, Jovan's just Googled.
Would you please tell me?
Yeah, that's him. That's
would
an old
you
photo.
Please explain?
Yep.
You go into a bank.
That's right.
And you have a passbook?
I still have a
Please
passbook.
Please explain
account.
That.
Well, I've stuck with the system. I just enjoy the system. You go in, you fill out. Well, you don't even have to fill out a withdrawal slip anymore. But here's the thing. and this is what I've tried to explain to people, I'm helping to keep the tellers in work.
Yeah, you're a real Robin Hood.
Oh, yeah.
Where is the proof of what's in the passbook should you lose it?
Oh.
How do you then claim the money that's in the passbook?
Well, you know what your account number is. You have that written down somewhere and you can prove your identity. But you're right, there's millions and possibly billions of dollars in unclaimed money in dead, supposedly dormant passbook accounts.
This is great. You guys have done a switcheroo.
Pete is asking you questions about this tech, if you will.
How many pages are left in your bank passbook?
Well, I don't know, a few pages. But when it is full, this is when the bank tellers absolutely come into their own, because they get to employ skills they haven't employed for years and they love it. They get out the stamp with the word cancelled on. They stamp every single page in the passbook. Yeah. They get a brand new passbook out of the little drawer.
Brand
new passbook.
They still exist.
They only exist for existing passbook customers.
For rolling over.
You can't get a new passbook account, but until we all die, they have to keep servicing us. So they get out the new passbook. They get the special little piece of paper that you have to sign. They then hold it under the black light to compare the signatures. Then they make a big show of screwing up the piece of paper that you've signed and putting it into the rubbish so that you can see they haven't secretly kept your signature. These are all skills that probably most people think no longer exist anymore. They do exist.
Nobody under 60 would have those skills.
But all the tellers have to have those skills.
They do.
Because they've got pensioners coming in with passbooks.
Oh, I love Joe how Van Tony Hader sees them light up when in reality they're just going, oh, God.
Don't you find that is a real Tony.
It's like, oh, they're loving this.
They do. It's like, wow, I get to go back to the past.
There is another first from the hideout. Yeah. That is a revelation. Well, rattle me, Radio Mike, honest, I've never heard anything like it. A passbook, Tony Martin has it.
An 84-year-old man is looking at me in mystification about passbooks, seriously.
No, I'm gobsmacked about it. I think it's terrific.
You're 84, Pete. You would have seen so many developments. You know, it's 2024 now. Do you remember the first life-changing big tech thing?
I would say prior to the mobile phone, the precursor, the pager.
That sent out a signal. That's right.
And went beep, 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 beep.
I remember.
And then, because you were the only announcer at the station, you raced to find a phone box that hadn't been vandalised. You rang, put money in and rang the station, only to find that, it wasn't urgent. It's not, they don't want you urgently. It's your auntie ringing to see about coming down for her birthday party. Then the next revelation was the pager with two different sounds.
Yeah.
One beep, 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 and one with beep. And you knew one was urgent and one was Auntie Thelma.
Yeah, right.
This is true. I remember Pete being one of the first people I saw with the pager on the belt. And we were recording something for radio. This would have been 35 years ago. And we're in the middle of recording. Suddenly that's gone off. I'm going, what is that? And it's like someone requires Pete to go upstairs and say, next on 9, surprise, surprise, with Nick Giannopoulos.
The commish won't be seen tonight.
It was an urgent voiceover demand.
In the last episode, Pete, you returned the Matrix to me.
In a nice way.
In a nice way, yeah. And now in a nice way, I'm going to return something to you.
Oh, it's a copy of Frankenstein. Well, it's the Bride of Frankenstein, isn't it?
No.
The Man Who Made a Monster. It's the original Universal Fright feature from 1930.
Because 31. I watched it last night.
What did you make of that?
I felt like I'd watched it already based on all the parodies of it. So it was like watching The Simpsons.
Yes, yes.
It was like watching, because I watched Scary Movie before I'd seen Scream.
Yeah, right.
And I found it really funny.
Even though you didn't know what they were parodying.
I was just thinking of the jokes that they'd made in Scary Movie. So I watched Frankenstein and I knew what was going to happen. But it was so interesting to watch it play out in its true form, because it's very slow.
Yes, it
and
is.
And I don't say that as someone who gets bored, but no. It's, you literally watch someone walk from a room into another room.
Yeah.
There's no suggested cut.
You've got to understand, in 1931, people had less things to do.
No, there but was,
like, oh, my God, they're walking to another room.
But that goes back to show you that really filmmaking
oh, yeah.
took a lot from the theatre side of things, where they really were photographing what they'd seen in a theatre. So they couldn't get away from those fancy cuts that we take for granted today.
It did feel like a stage show a little bit, even the way it was lit and all those shadows cast on the walls. Yep. And yeah, it was great. And then the whole time I was thinking, this would be blowing Pete's mind. This would be the way I watched The Matrix, where yeah. it was like, incredible. Now I'd like to do a quiz on you both about Ooh. Frankenstein, so I can hear the music kick in now. There listen, we go.
How's that music, Pete?
Are you ready, Pete? You should ace this.
I've never been more ready.
Which comedy actor does Dr. Frankenstein best resemble?
From the present, you mean?
Yes, from the present. Which
actor? Who was Dr. Frankenstein?
Colin Clive.
Who does he look like? Which big name comedy actor?
Oh, gosh.
I couldn't get Bill Hader out of my head when I was watching it. Or really? I would have accepted Jim Carrey as well.
Oh,
well, I got it out of my head. I've never heard of Bill Hader.
Who is the monster credited as in the opening credits?
Oh, you mean the character?
Yeah.
Oh, who Frankenstein's monster.
So it has the monster, dot, 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 dot. Who's on the end there? Who plays the monster? But what is it in the opening credits?
Oh, it's Boris Karloff.
A question mark, yeah, but I think your question mark.
It's a question mark. Pete got it.
Yes.
Yeah, just to, you know, make it a bit more mysterious.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's only in the end credits that he's properly
revealed.
Credited.
Okay. Yeah.
In terms of duration, is the film too short, too long, or the perfect duration?
Perfect.
I'd say perfect.
Yeah, it's perfect. Yes. I looked at the DVD case. I saw 1 hour 7. I'm like, great, I can do this.
An hour seven. What a
was
treat.
It short, was it?
Yeah, yeah.
1 hour 7.
It was a slightly longer TikTok video. How often does Dr. Frankenstein do a Malcolm in the Middle and break the fourth wall?
Does he do that?
He does that.
Really? He talks to camera.
He talks to camera. That or his eye line is totally off and I thought he was talking to me. But he does it once. It's only once in the film and I'm thinking, is he going to refer to us again? No, he doesn't. And it's right before he brings the monster to life.
Must be a mistake, surely.
Yeah.
Who knows? Often things that you think are new have been done many, many years earlier.
And how does the film end? What is the last scene of the film?
Oh, see, I haven't seen this
in
since
a monster
I was a kid.
Epic, if you will.
Gee, that's a good question.
How does the film end?
Do they go back to the little girl who nearly got chucked down the well?
I think
they go back
he goes down.
She drowns.
She does.
He falls down a well.
The last scene is the older character, the father-in-law, taking a sip of a drink and making a joke.
Really?
And that's how it ends.
What was the joke?
Oh, I can't remember. It was just like, I like to drink. It was just like, I'm going to get pissed now joke. But
really?
It doesn't end with the monster.
The end.
That's what
Frankenstein.
That's what it felt like. It felt like they'd gone too hard with all its dark themes because Frankenstein is literally burnt alive, right?
Sure, yeah.
And then it cuts to just an old man having a drink. And that's the
really?
Movie.
Gee, that's great. There are things about one of my favourite movies I didn't realise.
That's the thing. When you haven't seen one of your favourite movies for years and then you go back and you go, I don't remember this at all.
No.
That's always a surprise.
I should have said the monster flies up to camera after a phone call in a phone booth.
Okay, I have got an out of left field topic for us.
Oh.
Has anyone in this room ever been involved in a murder? Go with me.
Pete,
and
yes.
How does this relate to Les Smith? I'll tell you. No, I'm not going to implicate your dad in a crime, Pete, posthumously.
So you're about to reveal something horrible.
Remember recently I was saying we were walking, me and Serena walking every street in Melbourne, and we discovered the Les Smith plaque.
Yes.
It's in Doncaster.
Yep.
A couple of weeks after that, we were walking in Doncaster, and two blocks from where we were walking, a murder occurred. an actual, and we were driving past the police tape and sirens, and we were going, wow, if we were just one day ahead in our walking, we could possibly have been where that occurred. And that got me thinking, have I ever been involved in a murder case? And I went, yes, I have. Here's what happened. So we're making the film Crackerjack, which, Pete, you are in.
Yes.
This was in the year 2001. We're in the town of Corowa. No, Corowa?
Yes.
We've got there for a week of filming. The first night, we have a barbecue on the banks of a river. All ends at about 7:30. Next morning, dead body found in the exact place where we'd had the barbecue.
Wow.
What was the use-by date on the sausages?
There was no one from the show, no one from the crew. To this day, that murder has never been solved. And as a result, everyone who worked on the film was dragged down to the police station. And for the only time in my life, I found myself in that classic scene from a movie where you're in a room with a detective and you hear the words, "Where were you at, you know, 8:05 last night?"
Gee, that's heavy.
Now, do we want From the Hideout to turn into a serial spin-off?
This could be it. Right now, we are jumping up the iTunes charts.
This is basically an episode of Only Murders in the Building.
This is fantastic.
The whole season.
Imagine if we were able to solve this crime by the end of this season of From the Hideout. But here's the thing. So
we all the magpie the whole time.
We all get dragged down the cop shop and the bloke goes, "Where were you?" And I go, "I was at the local hotel. Drinking with Bill Hunter." And the bloke goes, "Yeah, we're getting quite a lot of that." And most of us had been, yeah, had a fantastic alibi, which was we were sitting at a table with, listen to this cast, Frank Wilson. These are names you're not going to know, I'm sure, Joven. Monica Morn, Lois Ramsey, Bob Hornery.
Oh, gee.
All made up.
Peter Annenson. All these greats.
That's a great cast,
of
yes.
Australian film and television, and just listening to anecdotes, much like the ones we would tell on this show. But that was the only time in my life I've been required to provide an alibi in a murder case.
And never solved.
Never solved, because occasionally I'll Google it. Nothing.
The Crackerjack murder.
It should be known as the Crackerjack murder.
Wow. Wasn't killed with a bowling ball, was he? Because that would be a real implication.
Imagine
you know, we were
that.
Given a bowling through Mick's generosity and the whole thing. I don't know whether
yes,
you recall.
Yes, everyone who worked on the film received a lawn bowl
yes.
engraved with their name.
Yep.
I still have that in my house.
So do I.
It's on a shelf. It's like it's stopping books from falling over. And every now and then it rolls off the shelf. Like if there's an earthquake. It'll roll off the shelf and it's like a hell of a noise.
Do you think maybe it's like Interstellar where he's come from a different time and he's trying to communicate to you through the wall? I know the murder. It's Morse. It's Morse code, Tony.
That's interesting.
What sort of forward thinking is that to do? You don't know if the film's going to be a hit.
No.
You're going to get your money back. You've extended yourself, I presume, you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's a big thing to do, and Mick presents this bowling ball which with a dedication on it,
yeah.
not just written in text or either,
yeah.
you know, engraved on it, a prized possession. You won't find that in an op shop.
No, well, the problem is that because I played a lawn bowls commentator in the film, occasionally, like probably once every 5 years, a lawn bowls society, whatever they're called, will contact me and say, "Hey, do you want to come down and be the guest?" You know, I'm going, I know nothing about it.
I think that's the best position to be in if you want to do that. Just make it up.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought you might be asked
yeah, right.
to go down and actually play and take the crackerjack.
No, they want me to.
That would be a great talking.
They're trying
point.
To get me to do the commentary. I'm going, I have no idea what was going on in that scene.
I think that's a dream gig. You should do it, Tony.
If you listen to what I'm saying in the film, I'm talking about Ricky Martin for half of it.
We love that stuff. Come down.
Would the owner of Brown Cortina license plate CDR 058 please return to your car? Your right indicator is still on.
Well, it's worth revisiting that film.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
It's
because it doesn't date.
No, it's a favourite. It's often on, I think it might be on Netflix. And just explain what your role, because I was a lawn bowls commentator. Who are you
I
in
was
that
just
hit
a,
movie?
I'm a passerby.
Passerby
Mick
who?
Mick and Judith are walking up the street in Paran, where it was filmed, near the Paran Bowling Club, I think it is.
It's Windsor, I think.
Windsor, sorry,
yeah.
The Windsor Bowling Club. They walk, and I walk past, and make some sort of
insult.
Comment.
You insult Mick Molloy.
Yeah, well, at least it's tucked up the back where all the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalism resides, so no one's going to see it.
Oh, Nance, nice article.
Shut up, mate.
Still looking for your bowl, Jack?
Oh, I don't think it was an insult.
Yeah, it's a bit of a serve.
Can
you
I ask you both to stop talking
so
about Cracker Jack? Because there are spoilers right now for people who haven't seen it.
Okay.
And
I beg your pardon.
One of those people.
Wow.
Okay.
And I've decided to tell you now. We're recording this conversation.
Yes, we are.
So people will know if I've been beat up after revealing that fact. I have not seen Cracker Jack.
May I lend
now,
you my
Tony,
DVD
how much
copy?
Do you hate me?
No,
no, we don't.
Dive into
the DVD.
He will. I think I've got the Blu-ray. There's a Blu-ray.
Oh, well, there you go. You can step into the action.
I'm trying to think if there's, apart from obviously Mick Molloy, Pete and myself, Judith Lucy, if there's anyone in that film you would know. Samuel Johnson. Do you know that name?
Yeah, yeah, the Hungry Jacks guy.
Oh.
He would have been just starting out, surely.
He was in maybe The Secret Life of Us. He might have been in that around that time.
I'm kidding, obviously. He's done other things.
He is. What does he say? He's the voice of burgers.
The burgers are better at Hungry Jack's.
Is that Samuel Johnson?
Yeah, and I you said so. Angus was filming the new series, the third series of...
The Lincoln Lawyer.
A terrific series.
Angus Sampson, certainly a friend of this podcast.
Yes.
People would know him for many things.
Fargo.
He's in Bump.
He's going to be the new football coach in Heartbreak High.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
What, is that coming up in the future?
Netflix, I think, do a version of Heartbreak High. He's going to be in that.
Good on him.
So, okay. Nobody wants to confess to any crimes while we're...
Pete, involved in any murders?
You're out on your own with that one. That is worth, you know,
that'll be in the paper. Never been questioned by the police, Pete? Even as a child? You weren't witness to something?
Yes, I was questioned once when I ran away from home.
Did you?
Look, don't. I don't want to talk. It was only last year.
Can you hear that? That's the sweet, smooth clanging. That's weird. We don't usually hear construction work in the Hideout Society.
Oh, I love this place. There's a cocktail bar. Train?
It's a spooky ghost train. All aboard.
Pete, we were actually just heading to the appreciation wall.
I'll take you there. You can be my test dummies.
Okay.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Oh, fantastic. So this is what you've been working on, Pete?
A ghost train?
A spooky one. Seriously, though, I need some feedback before I finish this thing.
Try not to scream at the sight of this basket of rotting fruit.
Was that scary?
No, that was more gross than scary.
Try this one for size.
Shield your eyes from escalating prices.
Frustrating, but not frightful.
I see. Thanks for your honesty. End of the line.
Ah, oh, here we are.
At our favourite.
The Royal Blue Appreciation Wall.
Without the support of our Patreon, there would be no From the Hideout podcast. And this particular Hideout Society member deserves a special plaque on this glistening wall.
Sensational. Thank you, Darren Card.
Cheers, Darren. You are forever etched in our hearts and appreciation wall. Now back to the show.
Where'd Pete go? He was here a second ago.
How about this, boys? Is this scary?
Hello, it's me, Mervyn Purvis. Once a doll, now a human.
Yes, yep.
That's definitely scary. You've gone too far.
It's alive! It's alive!
Shut it down, Pete. Shut it down.
Quick, let's trap him in the windmill.
We have a windmill?
In a recent episode, we mentioned Pentridge Prison, which is now apartments, I'm pretty sure.
It is out in the Melbourne suburb of
Coburg.
Coburg, yes, it is. And also a beautiful cinema complex, the Palace Cinema Complex.
I always thought that the best possible ending to the Chopper Reed story before he passed away would have been him moving into one of those apartments in the former Bentridge. But why did we bring it up? It's because I have seen, and it's so crazy that I almost think I dreamt it, an episode of Ernie and Denise. Ernie Sigley, Denise Drysdale. They had a, would it have been a nighttime or a morning show at that time?
Oh, no, this was a nighttime,
nighttime variety show.
We went out and did an outside broadcast, as
it
was
called. From Pentridge Prison.
Yes.
And I showed a selection of clips from it on the Mick Molloy Show, which was a short-lived show on the Nine Network.
I'm launching a brand new segment called What Were They Thinking? Where we simply find old programs and ask the question, what were they thinking?
If you were to see it, you would think you are watching a comedy sketch because it begins with a montage of incredibly grim shots of the exterior of Pentridge, much like the opening of the film Chopper, with barbed wire, a bloke in a sentry box with a gun, and yet what we're hearing is da-da, da-da-da-da-da, live from Pentridge Prison, the Ernie and Denise Show.
Across Australia through the National Nine Network, the Ernie Sigley Show now takes you to Her Majesty's Prison Pentridge in Victoria for an exclusive telecast.
And then we cut to inside, and there's a room full of
crims.
I think it's not libelous to say criminals who are in prison, and they're staring at the stage.
Wow.
And out comes Ernie Sigley in a three-piece flared suit, and he's singing the song, That'll Be the Day.
Yes, that'll be the day. When you make me cry, you say...
Oh, my God.
And it was A Division, which is the lifer section, not they, just any old part of Pentridge.
That's right.
It was the really heavy part, A Division.
That'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yeah. It's like he's taunting them. It is an extraordinary hour of television. And at one point, Pete Smith appears.
Peter, what happened to you?
I've been framed.
Were you in physical danger, do you feel, during the
recording? No, I don't think we were in danger. But, you know, when you think about it, how we ever got permission to go out there and do it, I don't know. But it really does stand as quite a milestone.
There's a bit where they're doing the Darod's wheel. They're spinning the wheel and they get a rather tough bloke out of the audience, much larger than anyone on stage. They spin the wheel. It doesn't land on the number where he would win a prize. So the bloke literally reaches up, moves the wheel to moves it to where he would win a television or something, nobody dares
he
to
He walked
dispute.
Away with a new Toyota Corolla.
It's a beautiful prize, Merv. You're going for a General Electric 12-inch portable television receiver.
Or possibly a microwave, who can say. Well, that's... Lucky it's portable. He'll be able to take it from one end of his cell to the other.
Fantastic.
So that's what were they thinking for this week?
Extraordinary when you think about it.
Do you remember...
Do you remember pitching that?
Do you remember going there? Did you? You obviously had
Jackie
to go through.
Went out. My wife came out with that night
through the metal detectors.
Yeah, we were all I don't know. I don't think they had metal detectors in those days.
Jeez.
I think they just frisked you.
I don't think
there was anything electronic about it.
Hearing you describe that, I'm thinking, who had this idea and then who let it all happen? That sounds kind of crazy.
It's obviously
Pete.
Well-intentioned. Let's provide some entertainment
but
for
how
the
do you
prisoners.
Pitch, how do you... Okay, all right. Pitch it to me, Tony.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, here's an idea. Next Thursday, what if we all get into vans, go out to Pentridge and bung on a show for the prisoners?
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
I know.
Sounds great.
Pete, you're not getting out of this.
No, it is
you're
extraordinary.
You're not playing golf that day, mate.
One of the life, detainees, whatever you want to call them, and I can't remember the gentleman's name, but he had a radio station.
In the prison.
And he broadcast right round the prison.
Yeah.
It was the prison radio station.
Ratings are very good, I'm told.
Some of my friends of the day in radio used to provide him with records and all this sort of stuff, and it was very, very popular within the prison. And, I can't remember the gentleman's name, sadly.
Phil Brady.
No, well, I'm not sure whether Philip was there or not. I'm not sure.
From the
Pete,
prison.
So good to see you.
Is that the craziest location you ever did an Ernie and Denise from?
Even today, it sounds controversial, doesn't it?
Yes.
You try and get a TV show up in, can you imagine taking Q&A out there? They wouldn't get out alive.
I think we would all like to see that.
Yes.
I think they're still pitching it. They just haven't got it through. Could our next From the Hideout episode be from a prison?
I don't know how
we
that's
should
going
do that.
To go
what
now.
Do you think, Pete?
Should it
we...
should be from somewhere quirky.
Yeah, and how would we outro that show?
Just the same way we always do. You've been listening to Jovan Caro.
Thank you.
Tony Martin.
That's me.
And me, Pete Smith. Folks, there's no penalty for listening to this podcast.
Could Comedy Boys jokes send these companions down a different path? Guffaws and chuckles are well and good, but the finality of a serial is irresistible to the completionist.
Genres bend and twist, but they never invert. To follow a trend or stay in your lane, to swap puppets and impressions for inquisitive narration. Could this shift result in another podcast first?
Their enthusiasm, palpable. But did they truly have it in them? This was more than chummy conversation and op shop gifting, greater than a murder in a building. This was the case of the Crackerjack killing.
Would the puzzle be completed by the most unlikely, a trio of multi-gen comedians?
Or will the team return to their regular programming and the culprit remain a mystery?
May your qualms be calmed when you find out for certain on the next episode of From the Hideout.
Enjoy the show.
Thanks. Ooh, an exclusive area.
Hold on a second, buddy. Have you got access?
Oh,
Are you a member of the Hideout Society?
Sorry, what?
It's a Patreon page designed to help the making of the show and give you access to exclusive content.
The show? What do you mean, the show?
From the Hideout, the monthly podcast you're enjoying right now.
Behind you.
Okay.
Thanks, pal. Good to see you.
How come you let him in?
Members only. He's a member.
Ah.
Royal blue.
What?
Well, it's different subscription tiers.
There's beige, Beaujolais, and royal blue.
Each grants you different levels of access to all kinds of extra goodies.
Gotcha. Look, I'll have to have a think.
You've got it. Golly, it's so fun and exclusive in here.
So how do I sign up?
Just visit patreon.com/from the hideout.
Okay. Done.
Welcome
to the Hideout Society.
Why, thank you.
Beaujolais?
Royal blue.
Royal blue! Though Beaujolais is still fun to say. Now let me teach you the secret handshake. Oh, wait, I'll show you the horse first.